Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Logistic Podcast. So as you can hear, we do our today's episode in English, and we are talking about the US supply chains tomorrow. Having invited a guest, two guests into our episode today, and I'm very happy to welcome James Hill. Good evening, James.
Good evening.
And I'm also happy to welcome again Ralf Düster. Hello, Ralf.
Hi Tobias, hi Andreas, hi James, good to see you, and I'm happy to be with you.
Same here. So we will talk about the US supply chains tomorrow today. James is our expert today, and some additions from Ralf, so very happy. But maybe in the first point, James, you can introduce yourself a little bit to our audience.
Sounds good, and thank you again for having me today. So again, my name is James Hill. I've spent over 30 years in supply chains of various sorts here in the U.S., from the automotive industry, high-tech in Silicon Valley, to consumer products, and now running a semiconductor distribution company. I've run manufacturing and supply chains all over the world and gone through many cycles. So feel like I have a good perspective on how supply chains have evolved and how they behave under certain conditions, but we always experience something new, and the dynamics coming up over the next several months and few years are sure to bring a whole new set of dynamics that we'll work through.
Okay, thank you very much. So Ralf, over to you. Please introduce yourself.
Okay, so this time in English. Well, I'm managing director of Zetlog Germany, and I started my career after school with 2.5 years apprenticeship in global forwarding. Studied economy with focus on distributive and foreign trade. Then I went into the industry to the textile and apparel company Stahlmann Group, and there I was responsible for the global logistics at that time. When the new market started, I was in a project with McKinsey, and after a year of the new market, I started Zetlog together with my business partners as a co-founder, as an entrepreneur. That is the time being, and I'm also founded the Zetlog Corp together with my partners, and now I'm there, the chairman of the board of the Zetlog Corp based in New York.
Oh, thank you. For those who don't know Zetlog, would you just give us a short introduction of what you're offering?
Yeah, Zetlog is developing IT solutions for the end-to-end supply chain, especially for global producing or supplying companies. Our USP is to bring all partners together who are in the value chain of a specific business. And the procedure is that we get connected to the ERP solution of our customers, also to other solutions they have in use. And then we have the implementation together with the agencies, the suppliers, the factories, also with the technicians to make quality testings, external laboratories for testings, and of course the logistics providers, the 3PLs who get connected via TMS solutions they have in use, or they fill in the shipment information in the system so that we are a central part of the business in the value chain, in this global supply chain for our customer. And we added a new tool. So we developing solutions for 4PLs to work as a digital control tower to make the logistics life easier, more transparent, and the data flow and the information flow more visible with a close connection for the 4PL that is also it's getting more and more important. It was an analysis based by Gartner end of last year that this is a growing business, and we started here also creating a solution which is now in the first proof of concepts.
So thank you very much. So everybody understands we have two experts here covering the US and the European part and even beyond. And as the title already explains, we want to look into the future today. To make a start, James, where do you see the US economy at the moment? Where do you see the trade relationships with Europe and with the rest of the globe? What's the status quo where we start for the future?
Yeah, I think we're in a transitionary period. I think because of the upcoming election, each of the parties are looking to position themselves as pro-labor here in the U.S., but also maintaining the key relationships that they have globally. And so we're in this transitionary period. I think we will be through the election, and then we'll see a clearer picture of how the winning party will truly position themselves, because I think it will be a middle ground from where each stand today. Overall, trade relations are good with Europe. I think we continue to see Europe as a key strategic trading partner across pretty much every category, and want to maintain that. The dynamics currently sit outside of Europe, predominantly with China, and the dynamics that exist geopolitically there, as well as the geopolitical ramifications of the Russia-Ukraine war, which could change significantly depending on who wins the election here. But state of the economy here in the U.S. is actually quite good. It's proven to be resilient. We're continuing to look for what's referred to as the soft landing in the economy, the balance between the growth in the economy and GDP, along with labor and the unemployment rate. Overall, there's some caution. So people are being a bit cautious in terms of significant new investments in many areas. But overall, the economy appears to be very strong and quite resilient. And we want to make sure that that continues, as well as continuing to improve with our key trading partners.
Okay. So, Ralf, you have a good view on the other side of the Atlantic. Do you have anything to add?
So first of all, I completely agree with James' statements. I just came back from the USA. I stayed a couple of weeks in New York and New Jersey, Maryland, and in Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, one of the very important swing states for the Democrats as well as for the Republicans who will win this state. And I got the same impressions. The US economy seems strong. But I also see when I go to the groceries, when I go to the supermarket, there are high prices. Some families, when you talk to working class, when you talk to the middle class, they are suffering from these high prices. The gas price is still high, and also other prices and products. But when you are in the States, you get the feeling that there are more things really cooking. Yeah, so it's a higher motivation. Germans are pretty much very fast depressed. That is what you never feel when you talk to Americans. And when you see the weakness of Germany at the moment, that we are in a recession, that Q4 will not be better, and we also have the fear what is coming in 2025, I think the position the United States has, it's much, much better. When you see here that our consumers do not spend money, yeah, the consumption is weakening, and here Germany suffers much more than the USA.
So in the US, there are big events ahead in November. The election of your new president is coming along. So from our perspective, there are two options: either it's Trump or it's Harris. Are there any more options which maybe appear during this election, James?
No, it really does come down to those two. Any other potential candidates or parties have backed out of the race, and so it really does come down to either our former president Trump or Harris. So it's between those two, and really it's quite divided across the country when you look at it in total.
So this is exactly what we get to know over here, over the press, over the news. So it's interesting because the political system, or the not the political system, but the parties are quite different here, and we have other problems. But let's get back to the U.S. What do you think will happen, maybe in a forecast from just your point of view, when Trump gets elected?
Yeah, if Trump gets elected, I think there's the likelihood of a lot less predictability. So he's proven to be a bit unpredictable, and the people that he surrounds himself with are a real combination of very high integrity, quite capable, stable people, and quite unstable and unpredictable people. So the way I think about it is that if Trump is elected president, there will be that level of unpredictability, which will, he wants to use that as leverage wherever he can. So he's reluctant to make strong commitments. He wants to penalize certain individuals or countries. And that will create a level of unpredictability that will cause many businesses to delay significant investments or to make significant bets. Because then it also goes into a period where he can only be president for the next 4 years, and whoever comes after him may have significantly different policies. And so it also creates this reluctance to make large bets and investments.
I agree with James. When you hear the debates, or when you heard the debates between Trump and Harris, and also when you listen to the speeches from Trump, I think Germany will get some challenges. There are many, many speeches from Trump where he always talks against Germany, especially that he names Germany. He looks to the countries like China, of course, but also to Germany, because the trade surplus from Germany into the US is much, much higher than vice versa. And that is what he doesn't like. So he always says, well, German products, great. I love it, right? Quality, great. But the production should be in the USA. And the other week he had a speech at John Deere. John Deere mentioned in the press that they plan to outsource some of the production into Middle America, for example, to Mexico. And then he said, well, guys, when you think that you can close production here and you open a facility in another country, you can be sure that these goods will be more expensive when they come back into the USA, that I work on the duty, that I work on the taxes, that it will be not satisfying you having production in another country. And that is exactly what he feels, what he thinks, bringing the American economy into a new strength, but with domestic production.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. And he also positioned himself, the first formal review of the USMCA trade agreement between the US, Mexico, and Canada is scheduled for July of 2026. And so he wants to come across, again, very much with an America First strategy, trying to prevent too much from moving into Mexico, both to come across as being pro-labor, but also to position himself starting now as that date approaches for the review of the USMCA agreement.
Okay. What do you think, how will the relationship to China develop? For China and Asia are main sourcing countries, and in contrast to Germany, they have a different position of power, I think.
Yeah, I think he will continue to take a very hard stance against China and encourage the movement of U.S. Assets and production outside of China. He'll use that as an opportunity to gain leverage in negotiating with other Southeast Asian countries, certainly some of the ones that have benefited already, like Vietnam, but also very much with India as emerging as one of the largest potential players for things like semiconductors and large-scale production. So he'll use that as leverage, because he feels like the U.S. has not gained enough benefits from encouraging that move of production out of China. And so he'll use it to leverage negotiations with whatever his interests might be. But he'll continue that pressure on China, I would see, very much so. And he would add, I believe he would add tariffs. I think that's part of the way he's going to pay for some of his interests here at home, and also penalize them and encourage the movement out of China.
Okay.
Yeah, and, I think it's the same. Absolutely, James.
what is your view on the Ukrainian conflict? I think Trump positioned himself more about getting a deal with Russia or something like that. And this will this have a huge impact on the global supply chains?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest differences between the two candidates. I think he will work to try to negotiate a deal there that would be a significant compromise for Ukraine, whether they would accept that or not. He would, again, try and leverage our position with NATO and others to force a resolution that would be a compromise for Ukraine. I think that, whereas on the opposite side, I think that a President Harris would give a lot of conviction to our allies across Europe and NATO to more aggressively address Russia and give Ukraine more tools to fight that war and have a better chance of winning it. And from a supply chain perspective, I think that certainly a resolution to that conflict will create more predictability and security of supply chains in various ways. So I guess there's a, you know, if you look at it purely from a global supply chain perspective, it could help resolve some of the current issues in supply chains. But I think there's just a ripple effect. Certainly the conflict in the Middle East right now is also creating some additional supply chain disruptions and uncertainty. And so that environment of uncertainty and conflict and the impact on supply chains, I would project to still be in place for the next couple of years or for the foreseeable future. But I think a much different path between Trump and Harris. And again, that would influence how Europe, how NATO participates in resolving it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. I also see, James, that there is an increasing protectionism. Trump is planning what he did already and what is planned with China. But the countries who source a lot in China, they have to find new ways, which makes it also more complex than for the logistics, for the supply chain. And we can see it also here in Germany when the companies are already planning to go into other countries for the sourcing, that it makes it more complex. But nevertheless, on the other hand, Germany is much more moderate against China because Germany is much more dependent when it comes to goods out of China. When you see rare earths with 95%, which is coming out of China for Germany, and also some basic materials, medicine products, fever painkillers or whatever, which is produced in China. So we have to find a nicer balance than maybe the USA, that they have really the chance to get more production out of the domestic market as well as the other countries in Middle and South America.
Actually, one comment on that to add on to what Rolf described. I think that complexity is critically important for all the players in the region, because as manufacturing moves outside of China, even if someone has a China plus one strategy, it creates additional points of production, which inherently increase variation of different sorts. So forecast error, supply variation, things like yield and risk also deteriorate. So when you're training a new workforce in something, they're not going to quite have quite the same efficiency and yield that existing supply chains have in China. You're going to have to reconstruct different logistics routing, and you increase risk, like the recent fire that we saw at the supplier to Apple, where they haven't quite matured different parts of their infrastructure and process. So it increases the risk of those things, not to mention, you know, natural disasters or other potential risks as well. Also note that even here in the US, where we are trying to nearshore a lot of different manufacturing processes, what we're finding is that we're still very dependent on China for a number of not just raw earth, but the manufacturing capability of certain parts. We're finding we can't reproduce here or certainly can't reproduce here quickly here in the US. We have manufacturing companies that have committed to 100% localization here in the US, and they're finding when they get to 80, 85% of the way there, there's still 10 to 15% either of the components or spare parts or machinery that they're still very, very dependent with a sole source coming from China.
Thank you very much. So we were just looking at what happened in Asia and Europe. So what do you think will happen in the US if Harris gets elected?
Yeah, I think with Harris, it's a bit, there's still a number of dynamics that will reconfigure supply chains. But I think that she will message it much more clearly to try and create more predictability. So even if there are changes, she'll give a longer runway for companies to be able to adapt to those changes to minimize the unpredictable nature of it so that companies can more confidently make those investments. So I think there will still be a level of pro-labor, pro-nearshoring, but at the same time, making sure that the U.S. continues to play a broader role in the stabilization globally of global economies, which lead to the benefits of more security, less disruptions in a variety of regions around the world. Certainly, the relationship with key allies in Europe, key allies here close to home in Canada, Mexico, and other parts of Latin America, I think would be stronger under a President Harris, as she would look to distribute the benefits of nearshoring to our trading partners and less making it solely about the U.S. So predictability, as well as sharing some of the benefits to secure more stability around the world, I think would characterize a Harris administration much different than the Trump administration.
Okay. Ralph, would you agree to that, or what is your impression about Harris' election if she gets elected?
Yeah, I completely agree. We have to see what Harris will do also for the domestic market. She wants to increase some spendings to the working class people, to the middle class, so that she really wants to support them. She has the same plans that that gas must be reduced, that the groceries must, the prices reduction will come. And so I think the way might be a little bit different, but the goal will be the same. And what we have to see then, will it be a difficulty for Germany or will it not? Because I think all of us, we need strong partners in the global world, especially in the Western world. And just to hide somebody will not be very helpful for the future for the Western world.
So listening to what you guys just said, either for US or for the rest of the world, it looks a little bit like the outcome of the election in the US will be the main driver for this. Yeah, for the future supply chains in this world, it's either more protective with Trump or more open and allied with Harris. How do you look on that one? Do you think it's the same, or are there more and different drivers for the supply chain?
Well, maybe I can start. What I see that we have to do our homework also at home. Yeah, when you see the street situation, when you see the bridges problems we have, when you see the railroad problems we have, when you see that we have to do a lot of investments here in Germany for Germany, also for the global world, because Germany is still one of the most important export countries. And that is one thing that we cannot only point to the United States. That is something we have to do here in Germany, and which has to become much, much better. Because what we see when you go to conferences in the United States, I was at the TPM, and when you see how they speak about AI, how they speak out of automated car driving, when you go to San Francisco, you already see hundreds of cars without a driver, and you can hire them as a cab. There are so many things which are going on in the United States, and the Fraunhofer Institute just analyzed that Germany is not bad in creating AI and developing AI, but this has to come into the companies, that has to come into the industry. That still, when you see other analysis, that there are still companies who have 30% email traffic, that they have 30% of the companies are still using Excel spreadsheets back and forth. In the United States, they are under 10%. That is where we have to do our homework. The managers have to make the decisions that we build up a digital world also here for our companies, because we have the baby boomers which will retire. We still need professionals, and this can be solved only when we really do more in AI, when we really do more in digitalization, when we do more in collaboration.
Yeah, I would echo what Rolf just said. AI is really going to be a game changer. It's going to allow economies, companies, individuals to leapfrog from where they are to a whole new generation of capability if they choose. It'll leave some people behind for sure, but it will allow economies to catch up in many ways if they make the right decisions and right investments. But it's going to take years for it to ripple through the economy and different sectors of the economy. Everyone sees and hears about NVIDIA and AI and ChatGPT and Copilot, and those are certainly helping to inspire people's thoughts about what can be possible. But then taking that and really harnessing that, both on the hardware side to integrate the capability, starting with the data centers and rippling that through other hardware, but then also the software capability and the ways of working that companies have is going to take years, whether that's in the public or private sector. And so it's a huge opportunity, as everyone has talked about, bigger than the internet was. But it's going to take years for that to play out. In the short term, that's likely to create both opportunities and disruption in the supply chain. And then as things flush out, it will make things much, much more efficient. But this kind of spreading out of production, whether it's new products, new process capabilities, new manufacturing capabilities, it's companies are going to need to make decisions starting with the design of their product, the design of their new factories, the location of the new factories, how modular versus integral those designs are, so that they can match it up with that automated capability, as well as the supply chains. So thinking about if you can design your product in a more modular basis so that it's easier for you to move parts of that around and then integrate it closer to home. Decisions like that are going to have huge implications on the flexibility and cost of the supply chains. And it's also causing different parts of the supply chain to rethink what the risk reward is. So you have people like the contract manufacturers, electronic contract manufacturers, that have been paid a very, very low margin to bring in materials, produce a product, and ship it to an end customer. Through the pandemic, you ended up with a bullwhip effect of semiconductors, for example, where you couldn't get products because they didn't have the materials. So companies tried to get materials from wherever they could. And towards the end of that cycle, ended up with huge amounts of excess inventory, some of which is still in the supply chain that they're trying to reduce. And so it's causing them to rethink who takes on the cost of that working capital along with the risk and what the reward is for that. Because for taking on that working capital and risk, the contract manufacturers in that example got a very small return. And so they're unwilling to allow that to happen again and are renegotiating that distribution of risk and reward and who plays a role in those things. It's an opportunity for other companies to play a role, 3PLs or companies like my current company, Rand Technology, where we can take on a level of that risk and help our customers mitigate that and take on some of the working capital so it gets spread over a larger number of players. So it rebalances that risk reward. So AI as a technology is going to be just completely transformational, both from a product design as well as supply chain perspective. And it's going to add to this discussion of what that risk-reward balance is across the supply chains.
Yeah, the supply chain has taken on a very important and significant role now and in the future. Without a good strategy, that I completely agree, and a carefully thought concept how to get these AI and intelligent digitalized concepts into the company, it will be very difficult to stay competitive. So it is a challenge, but the managers, the professionals in the company, they have to find a way to get these things run, to stay competitive, to get the complexity and to work it out. And as James mentioned, 3PLs, 4PL, working closely together in the supply chain, together with the with their customers, with the suppliers, with the shippers. And this has to be connected, this has to be collaborized, so that at the end, the supply chain will run as smoothly as possible in this fragmented world.
And some people have a dream of a set it and forget it strategy, where you're going to have this technology that allows you to automate everything, and you're going to reduce the number of people. And it's going to through machine learning, it's going to understand your business and be able to run it in a very automated way. And I think that they're highly mistaken there, that it's going to transform it, but you're going to need people that have even deeper analytical skills and an understanding of the end-to-end supply chain to maintain those relationships over the course of time to ensure that it stays up to date with all the dynamics that are going on. So I think that the companies that are now reallocating the supply chain people back to a cost center and not giving them a seat at the table for how they're using AI and designing these future state supply chains, because they think the pandemic was just an event and they can go back to how they were doing business. And they're looking to other business leaders or IT to solve their problem for their future state supply chains are going to regret those decisions. So it takes an even deeper understanding of supply chains and the related analytics to put it in place and maintain it over time.
Yeah, James, that is exactly the way as the people should think, because when they say logistics department or whatever, they only create costs. That is completely the wrong way of thinking, because they make the way free that the goods can be produced, that the goods can go to the production and the goods can go to the consumer. And it is really the value chain which is created by the logistics. And this is a great mistake when you only think about the cost, because the logistics, they take care of the margin of the company, of the competitiveness of the company.
Okay, so if we talk about people that are responsible for supply chain and logistics, do you have 3 to 5 points where you would recommend them to emphasize, to put a focus on, to develop to in the next 3 years, if that's possible?
Yeah, I would say that supply chain leaders overall need to have a broader and broader business acumen around how the end-to-end business functions and what the trade-offs are, as opposed to being transactionally oriented and being incentivized by more of a siloed set of objectives. I think they really need to understand a broader set of conditions that enable and optimize their supply chain. And that sounds a bit ambiguous as I say it out loud, but I think that it really does require leadership that is able to adapt the supply chain in more real time to the conditions that it's facing. So I think the companies that rely on a hard-coded supply chain and a checklist of activities that their staff follows are going to be too slow. They're not going to be able to respond at the pace and scale that the market requires when we see these disruptions. So they need to design the product for the flexibility. They need to design their logistics and supply chain routing to enable them to move it as conditions change, not in a response to something, but more proactively. So understanding how the business is correlated to a number of factors and monitor those factors so that they can get as many leading indicators as possible to start mitigating the risk early, as opposed to purely responding to an event that's occurred. So certainly the tried and true understanding of logistics, operations, supply planning, but also an understanding of how the products go to market, how we service the customer, so that you can prioritize and make those trade-offs, as well as the financial implications of those decisions. The supply chain leaders need to have a broader set of business acumen that they can bring to those decisions and to the planning for the supply chain.
Yeah, we have a great complexity in logistics and supply chain, which is still very fragmented. So we still have a production, we have a storage of the goods, we have materials, we have different partners, we have deliveries to customers, we have omni-channel based on household articles or textile and apparel or other products. And so this fragmented supply chain is very, very complex, but we can optimize it with the flow of information, that we get rid of silos, that we get rid of media breaks, that the information flow, the data flow, that this will go as fluent as possible, so that we can get the answers, changes or whatever, as fast as possible to find the best way to optimize the flow of the individual goods.
I would just add, I neglected to mention relationships, those personal relationships. I think we've gotten away from that through the pandemic. People think they can do everything remotely, or they can do everything on Zoom or Teams calls. And there's a lot that we can do that way, but they've not realized the benefits of having that one-to-one relationship. The trust that gets built up by spending time with someone and understanding their environment. So as supply chain leaders, I would encourage them to continue to go and experience what's going on at every point in their supply chain, whether it's ensuring social and environmental compliance, whether it's to understand capacity and capacity utilization, whether it's to understand the flexibility of different nodes in the supply chain to respond under different conditions. There's nothing that beats going and seeing it for yourself to understand how each of the different environments operates and how they might respond under different circumstances. Because many companies plan emergency response or resilience, assuming that all else remains equal. Well, all else does not remain equal. So you need to make sure that you understand, almost like game theory, what are all the different decisions that everyone's going to make under different circumstances, and does your supply chain hold up under all of those, that full range of scenarios? And having those personal relationships, when I'm making a decision, when all else is equal, I'm going to make a decision that favors the person that I have the best relationship with and that I trust the most.
Okay, so if I understand you right, it's more about understanding the game and making the team fit to cope with whatever comes the way. So we don't talk so much about what if that or that happens, but we know something happens. We don't know yet what it is, perhaps, but we have to rely on the supply chain team, on every part of the supply chain, to be able to cope with what's coming, whatever it is. So
trust is very important. Partnership is very important to get this done, what has to get done.
Yes, and trust can come through those personal relationships, as I mentioned, spending time face-to-face, but also trust through the transparency of data. So if everyone is sharing the same information and seeing how the overall supply chain is responding, they can have more confidence. Similar to what we talked about under the different political regimes, you want to have that predictability and that trust that when you see different changes in the supply chain, that you can trust what's driving that change and how you can respond to it. So that personal relationship, as well as the digital relationship and transparency, is critical.
Okay, thank you for wrapping it up. It was very interesting to get your insights on what's coming, what we might confront it be with, and how to respond. And so I think you brought some very good inspiration for those who are responsible and need to cope with that situations. Thank you very much, James, and thank you very much, Ralph.
Thank you very much, you guys.
So, last question for this this podcast, as we take this question to every guest we have, is like, maybe you can name something as an inspiration for our audience. What maybe influences you to go the way you did it, or maybe something you read. It might be a book, it might be a podcast, a movie, some people, or even an event. Is there something you would like to recommend to our audience, James?
Yeah, the two things that come to mind as you say that are two books that I read recently. One was actually Shoe Dog, the story of Phil Knight and Nike. And the other one is Chip Wars. And so the Phil Knight book and the book about Nike was really, it inspired me because he really talked about his inhibitions and his thoughts and concerns as he started the company, but his perseverance to push through and along with a little luck was able to create something spectacular. Chip Wars talks about the evolution of technology and how that enables so much of what we do and how we do it, but also touches on the political side of things and the geopolitical concerns around semiconductors and the continued evolution and capability, production capability of semiconductors. And just both of those, it reinforces some of the topics we covered, that a lot of it comes down to those relationships and perseverance and going and participating in what's going on to learn and continuously improve, but also the fact that dynamics around the world and in supply chains will always be there. They'll change, the nature of them may change, the frequency may change, but they'll be there, and you need to design and your supply chains and prepare for them. Supply chain is something that I got into based on the advice of a university advisor. I started off as a marketing major, and I thought, after my first course, I thought, well, this is just obvious, you know, sorts of material. I think it's kind of boring, actually. And she thought that I was more operationally minded and suggested that I study, actually, it wasn't even called supply chain at the time. It was called operations and then purchasing and materials management. So I got a degree in business with an emphasis in this area. I went to work for Toyota after I graduated and learned the Toyota production system, and was able to learn a lot of additional tools that I use to this day. And I feel very fortunate in that I was able to get this advice and start my career in this area, because it's given me an opportunity to learn every day, to learn and to see things, to see factories, to see also the human condition in different parts of the world, to understand who makes the product and what are those operating conditions and how can I contribute to making it a little bit better every day. I truly feel blessed to have found this path, and I continue to feel that way and try to pass it on to others by coaching and mentoring people and participating in as many environments as I can to share my experience and knowledge. So hopefully that answers the question.
Oh, yeah. Ways more than I expected. So thank you very much. So cool. We are coming to an end. It was very interesting talking to you guys, getting to know what your opinion, what your insights are. And yeah, it ran very quickly. But Ralph, you have another additional
thing. One thing came into my mind when James was talking about trust and partnership. You know that I am inspired very much by Bruce Springsteen. And one rhyme came into my mind. It's from the song Land of Hope and Dreams. And this is really what we discussed in the last hour. And in this rhyme, it says, I will provide for you and I'll stand by your side. You'll need a good companion for this part of the ride. And what does it mean for me? In the discussion we had in the last hour, it's really my interpretation of thinking globally, that the Western world has to stand closely together, support each other. And of course, we need strong partners and here especially also the United States of America, don't care what president there will be in November onwards, or will be elected in November. But very important is that the Americans should feel that we are real partners, and that not we only take advantage of the strength of the United States. I think that is very important for me at the conclusion for the discussion we had in the last hour.
Cool. So, perfect statement for the end. I think we're done. Thank you very much, James, for taking time for this podcast. It was very interesting. Thank you very much, Ralph, for joining us again and giving us your time. So, thank you very much for being here.
It was a pleasure with you guys.
Yes, absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Cool. So, dear audience, we will meet again on next Friday in the next episode. And for today, we are done. So thank you very much. See you and bye-bye.